The problem, of course, is that kids going through without a good background in history think it's all Santa Claus. They think a character like Nero never existed, really. He was just a Santa Claus figure that Christ, for example, or Peter never existed. And the truth is, history is very, very real, and it has a great deal to teach us. And if we don't learn it, we sadly learn it again.
Welcome to Reality Check, a weekly podcast about anything and everything having to do with education. I'm Jeannie Allen, founder and CEO of the Center for Education Reform. We chose the name Reality Check because a lot of what you read about education these days is often wrong or misleading. If you want to know what's really going on in American education, from K through career, you're going to need a reality check. My guest today on Reality Check is a New York Times number one best-selling author whose latest book, The Fisherman's Tomb, is a theological thriller that I literally could not put down. It is the incredible true story of the 75-year search to find the long-lost tomb of the Apostle Peter. The story pits one of 20th century's most talented archaeologists, a woman, against top Vatican insiders, all true, and it's a story of the triumph and faith and genius against all odds. I am so pleased today to welcome author John O'Neill to the podcast. Welcome, John.
I'm so pleased to be here, Jeannie.
You know, so John, a lot of my listeners on Reality Check are probably wondering about now why I am talking to an author about something theological, thrilling, albeit historical, account of the search for St. Peter's tomb. So I want to start with your education, because this is a show about all things education. And I'm always struck by when people don't realize how much history and how much knowledge there's out there to grab, which is one of the reasons I invited you on the podcast, but also because your background itself just speaks to what you can do and what you can help expose people to when you are so accomplished. So would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about you?
Sure. Jenny, I grew up in a Navy family. My father was an admiral in the Navy. We lived all over the world, really, growing up. I went to a Catholic school in San Antonio, and then I went to the Naval Academy, which is where everyone in my family went. After graduating from there, I ended up eventually in Vietnam on river patrol craft. I was hurt in Vietnam, not wounded, but hurt. I ended up in a hospital in Massachusetts. After that, I went back and went to law school at the University of Texas. I actually finished first in my class at Texas, went and clerked for Justice William Rehnquist at the United States Supreme Court. In the meantime, I was on a debate that was then famous in 1972 on prime time with John Kerry, who later became the Democratic nominee for president in 2004.
Of course.
After law school, I practiced law for the next, close to 50 years. I became really interested in early Christian archaeology. I love the books of the Bible, early Christian period. And I have to touch stuff to actually believe. I'm like Thomas, mm-hmm. you know, the apostle. And so I began going to, for example, not only under the Vatican, but to a lot of Christian ruins as far away as Libya and in Ephesus and in Turkey. And I became deeply interested in all of that. The book came about because I went with a great writer named Michael Novak. I went under the Vatican. I then came back here to Houston, ate lunch with a man named George Strait, and serendipitously it turned out his father, who had been probably the world's first billionaire, had financed the entire excavation under the Vatican and also given all of his money away as he received it, which I thought would make quite an amazing book in this particular period in time.
It's fantastic to have someone with your background and your understanding and appreciation of history writing a book like this. I mean, in 2004, John O'Neill, you wrote New York Times' number one best-selling book, which I kind of got a kick out of, Unfit for Command, which actually interrupted, ironically, the Da Vinci Code's three-year run, which is so interesting as you come full circle to actually write something about truth in the history of the church.
We were proud. I did write that book, and it sold almost a million copies. Kerry claimed it was responsible for his defeat. I hope he was right, but I'm not so sure. But all the money from the book, we were really proud, went into a foundation that ultimately, I think, had more than $7 million that was used to help wounded troops from Iraq and Afghanistan. And so it had great consequences in addition to the substance of the book itself.
Well, and I should thank you. Before we jump into the Fisherman's Tomb, I should, not should, I want to thank you for your service. We've just recently celebrated Veterans Day, and we've been talking on this show and through a lot of the other work we're involved with about the critical importance of recognizing not just the sacrifice and the honor that people like yourself have bestowed on us in defending our country and our freedom, but the lack of appreciation, understanding of why that's important. What's your best and kind of counsel to those of us who want desperately for our people to understand history and why Veterans Day or any celebration is so critical to understand our world?
Well, I grew up so far removed. In my family, Jeannie, my two uncles, one uncle was killed at Pearl Harbor. Another one died covering the Marines, leaving the Chosin Reservoir in Korea. I lost one cousin on board the USS Scorpion, which, you know, went down off the coast of Africa in 1968. My roommate at the Naval Academy, my first classman, and so many of my friends died in war. I take public affairs as not a far-off thing, but a thing that actually I realized sadly can touch everybody's life. History is exactly the same way. The problem, of course, is that kids going through without a good background in history think it's all Santa Claus. They think a character like Nero never existed, really. He was just a Santa Claus figure that Christ, for example, or Peter never existed. And the truth is, history is very, very real, and it has a great deal to teach us. And if we don't learn it, we sadly learn it again.
That's so well put, John, and I appreciate that. And, you know, speaking of Nero, I think that was probably the part of the book that most shook me. I know about Nero. I've studied history. But the way you described how he disposed of Christians at the time, and this is not a, you know, a religious soliloquy. The point is he disposed of people because he abhorred what they stood for, which kind of goes to where this story almost begins because of how they found Peter.
Nero was the Hitler of his time, Jeannie. He was just exactly like Stalin, exactly like Hitler. He had a group he singled out that he to blame everything on, as Hitler tried to blame everything on the Jews, and Stalin tried to blame everything really on religious people. And the group he picked in 64-65 AD were Christians. He wanted to build a huge palace and a statue of himself in the middle of Rome. He actually built the palace. I mean, the statue was called the Colossus Nero. It was over 100 feet high for a guy who had no particular distinction. And in order to do that, he started a huge fire in the summer of 64 AD. The fire burned out the entire middle of Rome, all the fabulous houses, like Vauxhall Road of Rome, on the Palatine Hill. It burned out the great temple of Rome, its ancient temple of Jupiter. And people, of course, were angry, and they were very angry about the fire. And so Nero's solution was to hide the fact he had started it and to blame it on the Christians. And we have very good accounts of what he did from the Roman historians, Tacitus and others. He launched a terrible persecution. He would get the Christian men and women, dip them in oil rags, hoist them up in his garden and light them off as candles for his garden. He took little kids, he sewed them up in animal skins and threw them to dogs so that the crowds could watch them torn apart. So it was an incredibly vicious persecution, vicious even for the time. And as a part of that persecution, he killed both Peter the Apostle and Paul, the two most famous early Christians.
It's just, it's shocking. No matter how often I hear it, read about it, it's amazing. And it's so important for people today to understand this, because history does repeat itself. As you just pointed out, John, it repeated itself with Stalin and Hitler. And it's something we have to be constantly aware of. So he crucifies Peter and Paul. He throws the bones somewhere, right, in his...
Well, what actually happened is Nero had a set of gardens where, which is the place he crucified Peter. Peter was crucified upside down at his own request. Paul was killed in a different place. But that, those set of gardens were 400 yards from a trash dump on a hill. The name of that hill was Vatican Hill. And so Peter's body was taken and thrown on the hill by the Romans. And what happened actually is the Christians came over, found the bones. They wrapped them in cloth, reburied them, and they put a marker over the bones that looked to all except the inside of the marker appeared to be a pagan marker. And solely Christians worshiped there for hundreds of years. In the meantime, an amazing thing happened, which is the Romans began building huge tombs all around Peter's grave. Those tombs were Roman family tombs. They were like homes. Don't think tomb, think home. The whole family would get together there. They used them for generations. Finally, after the Battle of Meletius Bridge, Constantine agreed to build the first St. Peter's and legalized Christianity. Well, he agreed to build it right over Peter's grave on Vatican Hill. He had a problem. If he knocked down all those Roman tombs, there'd be a revolution in the empire. So what he did was fill it in to make it flat. And he sealed for all time both Peter's grave and the greatest collection of Roman ruins in the world, really. But when the barbarians came and destroyed Rome, all knowledge of all that disappeared. Now, the original St. Peter's stood there, and the legend said that Peter had been buried under it, but that was it. And so for almost 2,000 years, that's how things stood, until in the serendipity of life, Pius the 11th, the Pope, asked to be buried under the Vatican. They began digging his grave, and the workmen fell into a huge hole. It was one of those Roman tombs, and they found a Christian grave right next to the Roman tomb. And so, of course, they wondered, is Peter really under St. Peter's? And that's what launched everything in 1939.
It's really it's a fantastic story, The Fisherman's Tomb by John O'Neill, and you all have to run out and get the book, because even the great story makes me want to go back and pick it up and go to all the details. So this went on for 75 years, and you talked about at the top of the show meeting and having lunch with George Strake, whose father financed secretly this mission. Why was it secret, and how do you feel like you were... Like, how did he factor into this?
Well, he factored in very heavily, but the reason it was secret is that, of course, the Nazis, the fascists at that time ruled Rome. They could have cared less about the Christian relics, but they definitely would have seized all those Roman ruins that were under the Vatican. The Pope was also worried, I think, about a false claim of success or a false claim of failure, and so what he did is have the entire excavation done by hands with people who were right there. The problem with those, they found very quickly, relatively quickly, the marker for Peter's grave, but they didn't actually find his bones. And many years, a number of years later, 1950, they brought George Ward Leake out of the excavation. They brought George Strake back to the Vatican in order to celebrate the discovery of Peter's tomb, although the graves, bones hadn't been found. And what I think happened then, Jeannie, is that, the Pope expressed great dissatisfaction, or lack of confidence in the work being done in-house in the Vatican. And I believe that they talked to George Strait, and they said, look, you know, we have this problem. And Strait said, well, get the best man in the world, and let's solve the problem. And they said, well, there's a problem, George. And he said, well, what is that? And he said, well, the problem is the best man in the world is a woman. And they said, well, at least she's a good Catholic. And they said, no, she's actually an agnostic, George. And that's how Margarita Carducci, the impossible Margarita Carducci, got brought in. She eventually became deeply a Christian as a result of what she saw. But she was, an extraordinary person. She was the greatest of all the 20th century archaeologists, but deeply unpolitical. The very first time she was brought in to see the Pope, he asked her what she thought of the excavation. She said, you've done a terrible job. He fired everybody involved, at least as to involvement in the excavation, put her in charge, and it was she that was unable to solve that mystery. I really don't think, Jeannie, there was anyone else in the world that could have solved it other than Margarita Carducci.
And people covered it up or tried to take credit, and it's, you know, the story, she's a story within the story itself of the Fisherman's Tomb, John, because for me, as I was reading about her and I was reading about how she was at odds with everyone that she spoke to because they had their own idea about how history unfolded, and they actually doubted that they found the bones and they didn't value history. And she was resolved that there was something there when she began to discover the Christian writings on that, what, the graffiti wall, and really began to study, and I want you to tell our listeners a little bit more about the graffiti wall, but it just struck me as, how often do we hear this story in every generation about people who believe in something so strongly, and they know they're right, they've seen evidence, and everybody wants to dismiss them. We see this in education reform all the time, quite frankly, and yet the status quo is unto itself a force to be reckoned with. But she persisted.
Well, the most important thing she discovered were not Peter's bones, which she discovered, but the most important thing were the writings that she was able to decipher on a nearby wall and elsewhere underground, including nearby at the Colosseum and the prisoner section. What they were Christian writings etched into stone. The Christians had to etch them in a code. And so here you are with a code 2,000 years old, etched in stone. How do you ever decode that? Well, she did. And so Christ, for example, is Chiro. The Greek symbol is Chiro. There'd be Chiro, a line, and then a cross symbol, and then another line with V for victory, expressing their belief that the death of Christ was actually a victory for all of us, sometimes an R. Peter would be a P with two keys. Peter, the keys to the kingdom, understandable to a Christian, not understandable to someone else. And those are the most important early inscriptions, early Christian inscriptions in the world, the ones she discovered down there. And so she was extraordinary. It took her years and years to do that. Her prior project had taken her 26 years. And despite that, on the death of Pope Paul VI in 1977, who had authenticated her findings over and over again, 2 days after her death, the guy who had been fired earlier from the excavation came in and he fired Margarita Carducci. We need new eyes. And so after 25 years, she was fired. I'm sure he thought at age 76 that would be an end of Margarita Carducci, but he never saw Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind. He never understood a truly determined woman. She made astounding discoveries after she was fired. She fought always for her discoveries, and the greatest of those ended up in a symposium at the University of Milan, where she debated, and the guy in charge of them, of Sotheby Europe, was the moderator. They led her up on the stage. She was blind. She said what hurt her was people claimed that she had geared her science to her faith when she had no faith except from her science that she had gained. And at the end of it, the guy in charge of the debate, Sotheby Europe guy, said, look, I'm not a Christian. I don't believe in Christianity, but I've tracked your works, Margarita, and there's no question, Father, I'm sorry, but she's wrong. She found Peter. And so they named a street after him in Rome, and ultimately the Pope acknowledged that that's exactly what she had done, and of course directed the entire world to the significance of the inscriptions that she found under the Vatican.
It's extraordinary, and it's one of those not only just a story and such a critical chapter in history, but I think about all of our ed technology friends out there. We work with a lot of innovators across the world, frankly, and how this story and all of the things that you can see if you go to the SCAVI online in Rome or if you begin to read your book and the charts could very well become, and maybe this is kind of the answer to more and more people understanding and understand the roots of history, it could very well become something alive for students and people everywhere through technology, through sort of interactive apps and sort of the kind of technology intelligence we have today. And I say that, John, because you write, you told the story because of your great education, and this story tells us not only about history, archaeology, language, the role of religion, how people lived, how they died, everything you would want to know to make your own life and your own country better, is actually in this story right here about the fisherman's tomb. So whether someone reads it because they happen to be interested in Catholicism, Christianity, religion, or not, it's historical. And I feel like this is the kind of story that everyone needs to understand to really be able to drive even more learning and knowledge on their own part. So maybe we'll find someone to help take your story and put it on interactively in front of more people, because it's not that reading a book isn't a great thing, but sometimes you have to make things dance on the page to get people to pay attention.
Well, you're exactly right. The great thing about the story is you can touch it. You literally can go down under the Vatican. You can see those inscriptions. You can see where the bones are. You can see all the Roman tombs. They're magnificent. And then you can see that, of course, the Romans thought they were going to spend eternity there. And maybe they did. And then you can see very simple little Christian graves. So it's a story that's easily verifiable. And so that, I think, is, I think that to make history real, Jenny, you never really understand Roman history until you go to Ephesus or the Forum at Rome, and seeing things for many people like me that you can actually touch actually is what makes stuff real. You never really understand the English kings till you see that gate at the Tower of London that they led people through that were having their heads cut off. And so that's the magnificent thing about the SCAVI tour and the story of Margherita Carducci. But Margherita Carducci, of course, is a fabulous guide for everyone. What an amazing courage and so on. And George Strait giving all the money away in this terribly materialistic age. He gave everything away he made, maybe $1 billion.
They are clearly heroes. I've shared this, thanks to our great producer, Ramu Paluri, on this show before, but Joseph Campbell's quote, who defined a hero as someone who has given his or her life to something bigger than oneself. We ask students and kids and our families to think about heroes. We sometimes think they have to be someone famous, but Margherita Carducci, George Strait, having put this out there, people like yourself who've served our country, it's not difficult. It's difficult to be a hero, but it's not rare. And this is just another one of those stories that enumerates that for us all. John, final question for you. I am so thrilled that you've been on the show and hope this will inspire more people not only to follow in your footsteps, certainly to read your books, but think more deeply about history. What are the books that have had the biggest influence on your life?
Well, the Bible actually has been a huge influence in my life, particularly Timothy 2, the second letter to Timothy of Paul, when Paul was, I think, preparing to die, and then John, the Gospel of John. I've also loved any number of history books. It was one called Steering into Chaos that really is about the power of culture in history. That, you know, fundamentally, the point made over and over again with seven or eight different civilizations is that when you lose belief in the core beliefs of a civilization, when nobody will die for it, it'll collapse. which we see over and over again, I'm afraid, in civilizations. Those would be two of the books that would have really inspired me.
And both that could definitely and will definitely help anybody trying to make sense of the craziness that we live in today. My guest today in Reality Check has been John O'Neill, the author of The Fisherman's Tomb, about the discovery of the tomb of St. Peter under the Vatican in Rome. It's a book full of passion, intrigue, and I can't recommend it highly enough. Go out and get it, and be sure to share this podcast far and wide. Don't forget you can get us on Apple, Stitcher, and anywhere where you get your podcasts. Be sure to join us next time for another lively episode of Reality Check. This is Jeannie Allen. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for listening to this edition of Reality Check. You can subscribe to Reality Check at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn, and never miss an episode. Visit us online at edreform.com and follow CER on Twitter at edreform and me, Jeannie Allen. I look forward to exploring the world of education with you and another prominent guest next time. See you then.